And he turned back to Kaz. Always one step ahead, aren't you?
Giles, when it comes to you, I'd say I have a running start.
But Giles just smiled, a tiny smile, tight and satisfied. A victor smile, Inej realized with fresh fear.
The race isn't over yet.
Giles reached into his jacket and pulled out a heavy black pistol.
Finally, Kaz said. The big reveal. Now Jesper can stop keening over Bolliger like a wet-eyed woman.
Jesper stared at the gun with stunned, furious eyes.
Bolliger searched him. He... Ah, big ball. You idiot, he groaned.
Inej couldn't believe what she was seeing. The guard in her arms released a tiny squeak. In her anger and surprise, she'd accidentally tightened her grip.
Relax, she said, easing her hold. But all saints, she wanted to put a knife through something. Big Bolliger had been the one to pat down Giles. There was no way he could have missed the pistol.
He'd betrayed them. Was that why Kaz had insisted on bringing Big Bolliger here tonight? So he'd have public confirmation that Bolliger had gone over to the Black Tips? It was certainly why he'd let Holst put a bullet in Bolliger's gut. But so what?
Now everyone knew Big Ball was a traitor.
Kaz still had a gun pointed at his chest. Giles smirked.
Kaz Brekker, the great escape artist. How are you going to wriggle your way out of this one?
Going out the same way I came in.
Kaz ignored the pistol, turning his attention to the big man lying on the ground.
Do you know what your problem is, Bolliger?
He jabbed at the wound in Big Ball's stomach with the tip of his cane.
That wasn't a rhetorical question. Do you know what your biggest problem is?
Bolliger mewled.
No!
Give me a guess,
Kaz hissed. Big Ball said nothing, just released another trembling whimper.
All right, I'll tell you. You're lazy. I know it. Everyone knows it. So I had to ask myself why my laziest bouncer was getting up early twice a week to walk 2 extra miles to Silas Fry for breakfast, especially when the eggs are so much better at the Cooperome.
Big Ball becomes an early riser, the Black Tips start throwing their weight around Fifth Harbor, and then intercept our biggest shipment of Jurda. It wasn't a tough connection to make.
He sighed and said to Giles,
"This is what happens when stupid people start making big plans.
Yeah?
Doesn't matter much now, does it?"
replied Giles.
"This gets ugly. I'm shooting from close range. Maybe your guards get me or my guys, but no way you're going to dodge this bullet."
Kaz stepped into the barrel of the gun so that it was pressed directly against his chest.
"No way at all, Giles. You think I won't do it?"
"Oh, I think you'd do it gladly, with a song in your black heart. But you won't. Not tonight."
Giles' finger twitched on the trigger.
"Kaz,"
Jesper said.
"This whole shoot-me thing is starting to concern me."
Uman didn't bother to object to Jesper mouthing off this time. One man was down, neutral territory had been violated, the sharp tang of gunpowder already hung in the air. And along with it, a question. Unspoken in the quiet, as if the Reaper himself awaited the answer.
"How much blood will be shed tonight?"
In the distance, a siren wailed.
19 Burstrot, Kaz said.
Giles had been shifting slightly from foot to foot. Now he went very still.
"That's your girl's address, isn't it, Giles?"
Giles swallowed.
"Don't have a girl." "Oh, yes, you do," crooned Kaz. "She's pretty, too. Well, pretty enough for a fink like you. Seems sweet. You love her, don't you?"
Even from the rooftop, Inej could see the sheen of sweat on Giles' waxen face.
"Of course you do. No one that fine should have ever looked twice at barrel scum like you, but she's different. She finds you charming.
Sure sign of madness, if you ask me, but love is strange that way.
Does she like to rest her pretty head on your shoulder, listen to you talk about your day?
Giles looked at Kaz as if he was finally seeing him for the first time. The boy he'd been talking to had been cocky, reckless, easily amused, but not frightening, not really. Now the monster was here, dead-eyed and unafraid. Kaz Brekker was gone, and Dirty Hands had come to see the rough work done.
She lives at 19 Burstrot,
Kaz said in his gravelly rasp.
3 floors up, geraniums in the window boxes. There are 2 drakes waiting outside her door right now, and if I don't walk out of here, whole and feeling righteous, they will set that place alight from floor to rooftop. It will go up in seconds, burning from both ends, with poor Elise trapped in the middle. Her blonde hair will catch first, like the wick of a candle.
You're bluffing,
said Giles, but his pistol hand was trembling. Kaz lifted his head and inhaled deeply.
Getting late now, you heard the siren. I smell the harbor on the wind, sea and salt, and maybe is that smoke I smell too?
There was pleasure in his voice.
Oh, saints, Kaz,
Inej thought miserably. What have you done now? Again, Giles's finger twitched on the trigger, and Inej tensed.
I know, Giles, I know,
Kaz said sympathetically.
All that planning and scheming and bribing for nothing. That's what you're thinking right now. How bad it will feel to walk home knowing what you've lost. How angry your boss is going to be when you show up empty-handed and that much poorer for it. How satisfying it would be to put a bullet in my heart. You can do it. Pull the trigger. We can all go down together. They can take our bodies out to the Reaper's barge for burning, like all paupers go. Or you can take the blow to your pride, go back to Burstrot, lay your head in your girl's lap, fall asleep still breathing and dream of revenge. It's up to you, Giles. Do we get home tonight?
Giles searched Kaz's gaze, and whatever he saw there made his shoulders sag. Inej was surprised to feel a pang of pity for him. He'd walked into this place buoyed on bravado, a survivor, a champion of the barrel. He'd leave as another victim of Kaz Brekker.
You'll get what's coming to you someday, Brekker. I will, said Kaz, if there's any justice in the world, and we all know how likely that is.
Giles let his arm drop. The pistol hung uselessly by his side. Kaz stepped back, brushing the front of his shirt where the gun barrel had rested.
Go tell your general to keep the black tips out of Fifth Harbor, and that we expect him to make amends for the shipment of Gerda we lost.
Plus 5% for drawing steel on neutral ground, and 5% more for being such a spectacular bunch of asses.
Then Kaz's cane swung in a sudden sharp arc. Giles screamed as his wrist bones shattered. The gun clattered to the paving stones.
I stood down, cried Giles, cradling his hand. I stood down. You draw on me again, I'll break both your wrists, and you'll have to hire someone to help you take a piss.
Kaz tipped the brim of his hat up with the head of his cane.
Or maybe you can get the lovely Elise to do it for you.
Kaz crouched down beside Bolliger. The big man whimpered.
Look at me, Bolliger. Assuming you don't bleed to death tonight, you have until sunset tomorrow to get out of Ketterdam. I hear you're anywhere near the city limits, and they'll find you stuffed in a keg at Silla's Fry.
Then he looked up at Giles.
You help Bolliger, or I find out he's running with the black tips. Don't think I won't come after you. Please, Kaz,
moaned Bolliger.
You had a home, and you put a wrecking ball through the front door, Bolliger. Don't look for sympathy from me.
He rose and checked his pocket watch.
I didn't expect this to go on so long. I'd best be on my way, or poor Elise will be getting a trifle warm.
Giles shook his head.
There's something wrong with you, Brekka. I don't know what you are, but you're not made right.
Kaz cocked his head to one side.
You're from the suburbs, aren't you, Giles? Came to the city to try your luck.
He smoothed his lapel with one gloved hand.
Well, I'm the kind of bastard they only manufacture in the barrel.
Despite the loaded gun at the Black Tip's feet, Kaz turned his back on them and limped across the cobblestones toward the eastern arch. Jesper squatted down next to Bolliger and gave him a gentle pat on the cheek.
Idiot,
he said sadly, and followed Kaz out of the exchange. From the roof, Inej continued to watch as Uman picked up and holstered Giel's gun, and the Black Tip said a few quiet words to each other.
Don't leave,
Big Bolliger begged.
Don't leave me.
He tried to cling to the cuffs of Giel's trousers. Giel shook him off. They left him curled on his side, leaking blood onto the cobblestones. Inej plucked Vandal's rifle from his hands before she released him.
Go home, she told the guard.
He cast a single terrified glance over his shoulder and sprinted off down the walkway. Far below, Big Ball had started trying to drag himself across the floor of the exchange. He might be stupid enough to cross Kaz Brekker, but he'd survived this long in the barrel, and that took will. He might make it.
Help him, a voice inside her said.
Until a few moments ago, he'd been her brother in arms. It seemed wrong to leave him alone. She could go to him, offer to put him out of his misery quickly, hold his hand as he passed. She could fetch a medic to save him. Instead, she spoke a quick prayer in the language of her saints and began the steep climb down the outer wall. Inej pitied the boy who might die alone with no one to comfort him in his last hours, or who might live and spend his life as an exile. But the night's work wasn't yet over, and the Wraith didn't have time for traitors.
3. Kaz. Cheers greeted Kaz as he emerged from the eastern arch, Jesper trailing behind him, and, if Kaz was any judge, already working himself into a sulk. Dirix, Roddy, and the others charged at them, whooping and shouting. Jesper's revolvers held aloft. The crew had gotten the barest glimpse of the proceedings with Giles, but they'd heard most of it. Now they were chanting, "The Borstrad is on fire! The dregs don't have no water!" "I can't believe he just turned tail," jeered Roddy. "He had a loaded pistol in his hand." "Tell us what you had on the guard," Dirix begged. "Can't be the usual stuff. I heard about a guy in Slokan who liked to roll around in apple syrup and then get two..." "I'm not talking," said Kaz. "Holst could prove useful in the future." The mood was jittery, and their laughter had the frantic serration that came with near disaster. Some of them had expected a fight and were still itching for one. But Kaz knew there was more to it, and he hadn't missed the fact that no one had mentioned Big Bolliger's name. They'd been badly shaken by his betrayal, both the revelation and the way Kaz had delivered punishment. Beneath all that jostling and whooping, there was fear. Good. Kaz relied on the fact that the dregs were all murderers, thieves, and liars. He just had to make sure they didn't make a habit out of lying to him. Kaz dispatched two of them to keep an eye on Big Ball and to make sure that if he made it to his feet, he left the city. The rest could return to the Slat and the Crow Club to drink off their worry, make some trouble, and spread word of the night's events. They'd tell what they'd seen, embroider the rest, and with every retelling, dirty hands would get crazier and more ruthless. But Kaz had business to attend to, and his first stop would be Fifth Harbor. Jesper stepped into his path. "You should have let me know about Big Bolliger," he said in a furious whisper. "Don't tell me my business, Jess." "You think I'm dirty too?" "If I thought you were dirty, you'd be holding your guts in on the floor of the exchange like Big Ball. So stop running your mouth." Jesper shook his head and rested his hands on the revolvers he'd reclaimed from Dirick's. Whenever he got cranky, he liked to lay hands on a gun, like a child seeking the comfort of a favored doll. It would have been easy enough to make peace. Kaz could have told Jesper that he knew he wasn't dirty, reminded him that he'd trusted him enough to make him his only real second in a fight that could have gone badly wrong tonight. Instead, he said, "Come on, Jesper. There's a line of credit waiting for you at the Crow Club. Play till morning, or your luck runs out, whichever comes first." Jesper scowled, but he couldn't keep the hungry gleam from his eye. "Another bribe? I'm a creature of habit." "Lucky for you, I am too." He hesitated long enough to say, "You don't want us with you? Giel's boys are going to be riled after that." "Let them come," Kaz said, and turned down Nemstrot without another word. If you couldn't walk by yourself through Ketterdam after dark, then you might as well just hang a sign that read "Soft" around your neck and lie down for a beating. He could feel the drag's eyes on his back as he headed over the bridge. He didn't need to hear their whispers to know what they would say. They wanted to drink with him, hear him explain how he'd known Big Bolliger had gone over to the Black Tips, listen to him describe the look in Giel's eyes when he dropped his pistol. But they'd never get it from Kaz. And if they didn't like it, they could find another crew to run with. No matter what they thought of him, they'd walk a little taller tonight. It was why they stayed, why they gave their best approximation of loyalty for him. When he'd officially become a member of the Dregs, he'd been 12. And the gang had been a laughingstock. Street kids and washed-up cadgers running shell games and penny-poor cons out of a run-down house in the worst part of the barrel. But he hadn't needed a great gang, just one he could make great. One that needed him. Now they had their own territory, their own gambling hall, and that run-down house had become the Slat. A dry, warm place to get a hot meal or hole up when you were wounded. Now the Dregs were feared. Kaz had given them that. He didn't owe them small talk on top of it. Besides, Jesper would smooth it all over. A few drinks in and a few hands up and the sharpshooter's good nature would return. He held a grudge about as well as he held his liquor, and he had a gift for making Kaz's victories sound like they belonged to everyone. As Kaz headed down one of the little canals that would take him past Fifth Harbor, he realized he felt saint. He almost felt hopeful. Maybe he should see a medic. The Black Tips had been nipping at his heels for weeks, and now he'd forced them to play their hand. His leg wasn't too bad either, despite the winter chill. The ache was always there, but tonight it was just a dull throb. Still, a part of him wondered if the parlay was some sort of test Per Haskell had set for him. Haskell was perfectly capable of convincing himself that he was the genius making the Dregs prosper, especially if one of his cronies was whispering in his ear. That idea didn't sit easy, but Kaz could worry about Per Haskell tomorrow. For now, he'd make sure everything was running on schedule at the harbor, and then head home to the Slat for some much-needed sleep. He knew Inej was shadowing him. She'd been with him all the way from the exchange. He didn't call out to her. She would make herself visible when she was good and ready. Usually he liked the quiet. In fact, he would have happily sewn most people's lips shut. But when she wanted to, Inej had a way of making you feel her silence. It tugged at your edges. Kaz managed to endure it all the way past the iron railings of Zentsbridge. The grating covered in little bits of rope tied in elaborate knots. Sailors' prayers for safe return from sea. Superstitious rot. Finally, he gave in and said, "Spit it out already, Wraith." Her voice came from the dark. "You didn't send anyone to Burstrot."
"Why would I?"
"If Giles doesn't get there in time."
"No one's setting fires at 19 Burstrot."
"I heard the siren."
"A happy accident. I take inspiration where I find it."
"You were bluffing then. She was never in danger."
Kaz shrugged, unwilling to give her an answer. Inej was always trying to wring little bits of decency from him.
"When everyone knows you're a monster, you needn't waste time doing every monstrous thing."
"Why did you even agree to the meet if you knew it was a setup?"
She was somewhere to the right of him, moving without a sound. He'd heard other members of the gang say she moved like a cat, but he suspected cats would sit attentively at her feet to learn her methods.
"I'd call the night a success," he said. "Wouldn't you?"
"You were nearly killed. So was Jesper."
"Giles emptied the Black Tip's coffers, paying useless bribes. We've outed a traitor, reestablished our claim on Fifth Harbor, and I don't have a scratch on me. It was a good night."
"How long have you known about Big Bolliger?"
"Weeks."
"We're going to be short-staffed. That reminds me. Let Rojaka go."
"Why? There's no one like him at the tables."
"Lots of sobs know their way around a deck of cards. Rojaka is a little quick. He's skimming."
"He's a good dealer, and he has a family to provide for. You could give him a warning. Take a finger."
"Then he wouldn't be a good dealer anymore, would he?"
When a dealer was caught skimming money from a gambling hall, the floor boss would cut off one of his pinky fingers. It was one of those ridiculous punishments that had somehow become codified in the gangs. It threw off the skimmer's balance, forced him to relearn his shuffle, and showed any future employer that he had to be watched. But it also made him clumsy at the tables. It meant he was focusing on simple things like the mechanics of the deal instead of watching the players. Kaz couldn't see Inej's face in the dark, but he sensed her disapproval. "Greed is your god, Kaz."
He almost laughed at that. "No, Inej. Greed bows to me. It is my servant and my lever."
"And what god do you serve, then?"
"Whichever will grant me good fortune."
"I don't think gods work that way."
"I don't think I care." She blew out an exasperated breath.
Despite everything she'd been through, Inej still believed her Suli saints were watching over her. Kaz knew it, and for some reason, he loved to rile her. He wished he could read her expression now. There was always something so satisfying about the little furrow between her black brows.
"How did you know I would get to Van Dahl in time?" she asked.
"Because you always do."
"You should have given me more warning."
"I thought your saints would appreciate the challenge." For a while she said nothing. Then from somewhere behind him he heard her.
"Men mock the gods until they need them, Kaz."
He didn't see her go, only sensed her absence.
Kaz gave an irritated shake of his head. To say he trusted Inej would be stretching the point, but he could admit to himself that he'd come to rely on her. It had been a gut decision to pay off her indenture with the menagerie, and it had cost the dregs sorely. Herr Haskell had needed convincing, but Inej was one of the best investments Kaz had ever made. That she was so very good at remaining unseen made her an excellent thief of secrets, the best in the barrel. But the fact that she could simply erase herself bothered him. She didn't even have a scent. All people carried scents, and those scents told stories. The hint of carbolic on a woman's fingers, or wood smoke in her hair, the wet wool of a man's suit, or the tinge of gunpowder lingering in his shirt cuffs. But not Inej. She'd somehow mastered invisibility. She was a valuable asset. So why couldn't she just do her job and spare him her moods? Suddenly, Kaz knew he wasn't alone. He paused, listening. He'd cut through a tight alley split by a murky canal. There were no street lamps here, and little foot traffic, nothing but the bright moon and the small boats bumping against their moorings. He dropped his guard, let his mind give in to distraction. A man's dark shape appeared at the head of the alley. "What business?" Kaz asked. The shape lunged at him. Kaz swung his cane in a low arc. It should have made direct contact with the attacker's legs, but instead it sailed through empty space. Kaz stumbled, thrown off balance by the force of his swing. Then somehow the man was standing right in front of him. A fist connected with Kaz's jaw. Kaz shook off the stars that rocketed through his head. He spun back around and swung again, but no one was there. The weighted head of Kaz's walking stick whooshed through nothing and cracked against the wall. Kaz felt the cane torn from his hands by someone on his right. Was there more than one of them? And then a figure stepped through the wall. Kaz's mind stuttered and reeled, trying to explain what he was seeing as a cluster of mist became a cloak, boots, the pale flash of a face. Ghosts, Kaz thought. A boy's fear, but it came with absolute surety. Geordi had come for his vengeance at last. "It's time to pay your debts, Kaz. You never get something for nothing." The thought passed through Kaz's mind in a humiliating, gibbering wave of panic. Then the phantom was upon him, and he felt the sharp jab of a needle in his neck. A ghost with a syringe? Fool, he thought. And then he was in the dark. Kaz woke to the sharp scent of ammonia. His head jerked back as he returned fully to consciousness. The old man in front of him wore the robes of a university medic. He had a bottle of wood salts in his hands that he was waving beneath Kaz's nose. The stink was nearly unbearable. "Get away from me," Kaz rasped. The medic eyed him dispassionately, returning the wolf salts to their leather pouch. Kaz flexed his fingers, but that was all he could do. He'd been shackled to a chair with his arms behind his back. Whatever they'd injected him with had left him groggy. The medic moved aside, and Kaz blinked twice, trying to clear his vision and make sense of the absurd luxury of his surroundings. He'd expected to wake in the den of the Black Tips or some other rival gang, but this wasn't cheap barrel flash. A squat decked out like this took real money. Mahogany panels dense with carvings of frothing waves and flying fish. Shelves lined with books. Leaded windows, and he was fairly sure that was a real decouple. One of those demure oil portraits of a lady with a book open in her lap and a lamb lying at her feet. The man observing him from behind a broad desk had the prosperous look of a merchant. But if this was his house, why were there armed members of the Stotwatch guarding the door? "Damn it," Kaz thought. "Am I under arrest?" If so, this merch was in for a surprise. Thanks to Inej, he had information on every judge, bailiff, and high councilman in Kirch. He'd be out of his cell before sunrise. Except he wasn't in a cell. He was chained to a chair. So what the hell was going on? The man was in his 40s with a gaunt but handsome face and a hairline making a determined retreat from his forehead. When Kaz met his gaze, the man cleared his throat and pressed his fingers together. "Mr. Brecker, I hope you're not feeling too poorly,"
Get this old canker away from me. I feel fine. The merch gave a nod to the medic. You may go. Please send me your bill, and I would, of course, appreciate your discretion in this matter. The medic secured his bag and exited the room. As he did, the mercher rose and picked up a sheaf of papers from his desk. He wore the perfectly cut frock coat and vest of all Kirch merchants. Dark, refined, deliberately staid. But the pocket watch and tie pin told Kaz all he needed to know. Heavy links of laurel leaves made up the watch's gold fob, and the pin was a massive, perfect ruby. I'm going to pry that fat jewel from its setting and jab the pin right through your mercher neck for chaining me to a chair, Kaz thought. But all he said was, Van Eck. The man nodded. No bow, of course. Merchants didn't bow to scum from the barrel. You know me, then. Kaz knew the symbols and jewels of all the Kirch merchant houses. Van Eck's crest was the red laurel. It didn't take a professor to make the connection. I know you, he said. You're one of those merch crusaders always trying to clean up the barrel. Van Eck gave another small nod. I try to find men honest work. Kaz laughed. What's the difference between wagering at the Crow Club and speculating on the floor of the exchange? One is theft, and the other is commerce. When a man loses his money, he may have trouble telling them apart. The barrel is a den of filth, vice, violence. How many of the ships you send sailing out of the Ketterdam harbors never return? That doesn't one out of five, Van Eck. One out of every five vessels you send seeking coffee and Jorda and bolts of silk sinks to the bottom of the sea, crashes on the rocks, falls prey to pirates. One out of five crews dead, their bodies lost to foreign waters, food for deep sea fishes. Let's not speak of violence. I won't argue ethics with a stripling from the barrel. Kaz didn't really expect him to. He was just stalling for time as he tested the tightness of the cuffs around his wrists. He let his fingers feel along the lengths of chains as far as they were able, still puzzling over where Van Eck had brought him. Though Kaz had never met the man himself, he'd had cause to learn the layout of Van Eck's house inside and out. Wherever they were, it wasn't the Mercher's mansion. Since you didn't bring me here to philosophize, what business? It was the question spoken at the opening of any meeting, a greeting from a peer, not a plea from a prisoner. I have a proposition for you. Rather, the council does. Kaz hid his surprise. Does the merchant council begin all negotiations with a beating? Consider it a warning. And a demonstration. Kaz remembered the shape from the alley, the way it had appeared and disappeared like a ghost. Jordy. He gave himself an internal shake. Not Jordy, Podge, focus. They'd nabbed him because he'd been flush off of victory and distracted. This was his punishment, and it wasn't a mistake he'd make again. That doesn't explain the phantom. For now, he pushed the thought aside. What possible use would the merchant council have for me? Van Eck thumbed through the papers in his hand. You were first arrested at 10, he said, scanning the page. Everyone remembers the first time. Twice again that year, twice at 11, you were picked up when the Stodwatch rousted a gambling hall when you were 14, but you haven't served any time since. It was true. No one had managed a pinch on Kaz in 3 years. I cleaned up, Kaz said. Found honest work. Live a life of industry and prayer. Don't blaspheme.
Vanek said mildly, but his eyes flashed briefly with anger.
A man of faith, Kaz noted. As his mind sorted through everything he knew about Vanek, prosperous, pious, a widower recently remarried to a bride not much older than Kaz himself, and of course there was the mystery of Vanek's son. Vanek continued paging through the file. You run book on prize fights, horses, and your own games of chance. You've been floor boss at the Crow Club for more than 2 years. You're the youngest to ever run a betting shop, and you've doubled its profits in that time. You're a blackmailer. I broker information. A con artist. I create opportunity. A bawd and a murderer. I don't run whores, and I kill for a cause. And what cause is that? Same as yours, Murch. Profit.
How do you get your information, Mr. Brecker?
You might say I'm a lockpick.
You must be a very gifted one.
I am indeed. Kaz leaned back slightly. You see, every man is a safe, a vault of secrets and longings. Now, there are those who take the brute's way, but I prefer a gentler approach. The right pressure applied at the right moment, in the right place. It's a delicate thing.
Do you always speak in metaphors, Mr. Brecker?
Kaz smiled.
It's not a metaphor. He was out of his chair before his chains hit the ground. He leapt the desk, snatching a letter opener from its surface in one hand and catching hold of the front of Van Eck's shirt with the other. The fine fabric bunched as he pressed the blade to Van Eck's throat. Kaz was dizzy, and his limbs felt creaky from being trapped in the chair, but everything seemed sunnier with a weapon in his hand. Van Eck's guards were facing him, all with guns and swords drawn. He could feel the merch's heart pounding beneath the wool of his suit.
I don't think I need to waste breath on threats, Kaz said. Tell me how to get to the door, or I'm taking you through the window with me.
I think I could change your mind.
Kaz gave him a little jostle. I don't care who you are or how big that ruby is. You don't take me from my own streets, and you don't try to make a deal with me while I'm in chains.
Mika, Vanek called,
and then it happened again. A boy walked through the library wall. He was pale as a corpse and wore an embroidered blue Grisha Tidemaker's coat with a red and gold ribbon at the lapel indicating his association with Vanek's house. But not even Grisha could just stroll through a wall.
Drugged, Kaz thought, trying not to panic.
I've been drugged. Or it was some kind of illusion.
The kind they performed in the theaters off East Stave. A girl cut in half, doves from a teapot.
What the hell is this?
He growled.
Let me go and I'll explain.
You can explain right where you are.
Vanek huffed a short, shaky breath.
What you're seeing are the effects of Jurda Parem.
Jurda is just a stimulant.
The little dried blossoms were grown in Novia Zem and sold in shops all over Caterdam. In his early days in the dregs, Kaz had chewed them to stay alert during stakeouts. It had stained his teeth orange for days after.
It's harmless, he said.
Jurda Parem is something completely different.
And it is most definitely not harmless. So you did drug me.
Not you, Mr. Brecker.
Mika.
Kaz took in the sickly pallor of the Grisha's face. He had dark hollows beneath his eyes and the fragile, trembling build of someone who had missed several meals and didn't seem to care.
Jurda Parem is a cousin to ordinary Jurda, Vanek continued. It comes from the same plant.
We're not sure of the process by which the drug is made, but a sample of it was sent to the Kirch Merchant Council by a scientist named Bo Yul Bayor.
Shu?
Yes.
He wished to defect, so he sent us a sample to convince us of his claims regarding the drug's extraordinary effects.
Please, Mr. Brecker,
This is a most uncomfortable position. If you'd like, I will give you a pistol, and we can sit and discuss this in a more civilized fashion.
A pistol and my cane.
Van Eyck gestured to one of his guards, who exited the room and returned a moment later with Kaz's walking stick.
Kaz was just glad he used the damn door.
Pistol first, Kaz said. Slowly.
The guard unholstered his weapon and handed it to Kaz by the grip.
Kaz grabbed and cocked it in one quick movement, then released Van Eyck, tossing the letter opener onto the desk, and snatched his cane from the guard's hand.
The pistol was more useful, but the cane brought Kaz a relief he didn't care to quantify.
Van Eyck took a few steps backward, putting distance between himself and Kaz's loaded gun. He didn't seem eager to sit. Neither was Kaz. So he kept close to the window, ready to bolt if need be.
Van Eyck took a deep breath and tried to set his suit to rights.
That cane is quite a piece of hardware, Mr. Brecker.
Is it fabricator-made?
It was, in fact, the work of a Grisha fabricator. Lead-lined and perfectly weighted for breaking bones.
None of your business. Get talking, Van Eyck.
The merchant cleared his throat.
When Bo Yulbayur sent us the sample of Jordaparam, we fed it to 3 Grisha. One from each order.
Happy volunteers?
Indentures, Van Eyck conceded. The first 2 were a fabricator and a healer indentured to Councilman Hode. Mika is a tide maker. He's mine. You've seen what he can do using the drug.
Hode. Why did that name ring a bell?
I don't know what I've seen, Kaz said as he glanced at Mika. The boy's gaze was focused intently on Van Eyck, as if awaiting his next command. Or maybe another fix.
An ordinary tide maker can control currents, summon water or moisture from the air or nearby source. They manage the tides in our harbor. But under the influence of Jordaparam, a tide maker can alter his own state from solid to liquid to gas and back again and do the same with other objects, even a wall. Kaz was tempted to deny it, but he couldn't explain what he'd just seen any other way.
How?
It's hard to say. You're aware of the amplifiers some Grisha wear?
I've seen them, Kaz said.
Animal bones, teeth, scales.
I hear they're hard to come by.
Very. But they only increase a Grisha's power. Jordaparam alters a Grisha's perception.
So?
Grisha manipulate matter at its most fundamental levels. They call it the small science. Under the influence of Param, those manipulations become faster and far more precise. In theory, Jordaparam is just a stimulant like its ordinary cousin. But it seems to sharpen and hone a Grisha's senses. They can make connections with extraordinary speed. Things become possible that simply shouldn't be.
What does it do to sorry sobs like you and me?
Van Eyck seemed to bristle slightly at being lumped in with Kaz, but he said,
It's lethal.
An ordinary mind cannot tolerate Param, in even the lowest doses. You said you gave it to 3 Grisha. What can the others do?
Here, Van Eyck said, reaching for a drawer in his desk.
Kaz lifted his pistol.
Easy.
With exaggerated slowness, Van Eyck slid his hand into the desk drawer and pulled out a lump of gold. This started as lead.
Like hell it did, Van Eyck shrugged.
I can only tell you what I saw. The fabricator took a piece of lead in his hands, and moments later we had this.
How do you even know it's real?
Asked Kaz. It has the same melting point as gold, the same weight and malleability.
If it's not identical to gold in every way, the difference has eluded us.
Have it tested, if you like. Kaz tucked his cane under his arm and took the heavy lump from Van Eyck's hand. He slipped it into his pocket.
Whether it was real or just a convincing imitation, a chunk of yellow that big could buy plenty on the streets of the barrel.
You could have gotten that anywhere, Kaz pointed out.
I would bring Hode's fabricator here to show you himself, but he isn't well. Kaz's gaze flicked to Mika's sickly face and damp brow. The drug clearly came with a price.
Let's say this is all true and not cheap coin trick magic. What does it have to do with me?
Perhaps you heard of the shoe paying off the entirety of their debt to Kirch with a sudden influx of gold? The assassination of the trade ambassador from Novia Zem? The theft of documents from a military base in Ravka? So that was the secret behind the murder of the ambassador in the washroom, and the gold in those three shoe ships must have been fabricator-made. Kaz hadn't heard anything about Ravkin documents, but he nodded anyway. We believe all these occurrences are the work of Grisha under the control of the shoe government and under the influence of Judaparem. Van Eck scrubbed a hand over his jaw. Mr. Bracker, I want you to think for a moment about what I'm telling you. Men who can walk through walls. No vault or fortress will ever be safe again. People who can make gold from lead, or anything else for that matter. Who can alter the very material of the world. Financial markets would be thrown into chaos. The world economy would collapse.
Very exciting.
What is it you want from me, Van Eck? You want me to steal a shipment, the formula?
No. I want you to steal the man.
Kidnap Boyul Bayor?
Save him.
A month ago, we received a message from Yul Bayur begging for asylum. He was concerned about his government's plans for Judaparem, and we agreed to help him defect. We set up a rendezvous, but there was a skirmish at the drop point.
With the shoe?
No. With Fjordans. Kaz frowned. The Fjordans must have spies deep in Shuhan or Kirch. If they had learned about the drug and Boyul Bayur's plan so quickly.
So send some of your agents after him. The diplomatic situation is somewhat delicate. It is essential that our government not be tied to Yul Bayur in any way. You have to know he's probably dead. The Fjordans hate Grisha. There's no way they'd let knowledge of this drug get out.
Our sources say he is very much alive and that he is awaiting trial. Van Eck cleared his throat. At the ice court. Kaz stared at Van Eck for a long minute, then burst out laughing.
Well, it's been a pleasure being knocked unconscious and taken captive by you, Van Eck. You can be sure your hospitality will be repaid when the time is right. Now have one of your lackeys show me to the door.
We're prepared to offer you 5 million Kruger. Kaz pocketed the pistol. He wasn't afraid for his life now, just irritated that this fink had wasted his time.
This may come as a surprise to you, Van Eck, but we canal rats value our lives just as much as you do yours.
10 million.
There's no point to a fortune I won't be alive to spend. Where's my hat? Did your tide maker leave it behind in the alley?
20. Kaz paused. He had the eerie sense that the carved fish on the walls had halted mid-leap to listen.
20 million, Kruger?
Van Eck nodded. He didn't look happy.
I'd need to convince a team to walk into a suicide mission. That won't come cheap.
That wasn't entirely true. Despite what he'd said to Van Eck, there were plenty of people in the barrel who didn't have much to live for.
20 million Kruger is hardly cheap, Van Eck snapped. The ice court has never been breached.
That's why we need you, Mr. Brecker. It's possible Boyul Bayur is already dead, or that he's given up all his secrets to the Fjordans. But we think we have at least a little time to act before the secret of Judaparem is put into play.
If the shoe have the formula,
Yul Bayur claimed he'd managed to mislead his superiors and keep the specifics of the formula secret. We think they're operating from whatever limited supply Yul Bayur left behind.
Greed bows to me.
Maybe Kaz had been a bit too cocky on that front. Now Greed was doing Vanak's bidding. The lever was at work, overcoming Kaz's resistance, moving him into place.
20 million krug.
What kind of a job would this be? Kaz didn't know anything about espionage or government squabbles. Why should stealing Bo Yul Bayur from the Ice Corp be any different from liberating valuables from a merchant's safe?
The most well-protected safe in the world, he reminded himself. He'd need a very specialized team.
A desperate team that wouldn't balk at the real possibility that they'd never come back from this job. And he wouldn't be able to just pull from the dregs. He didn't have the talent he'd need in their ranks. That meant he'd have to watch his back more than usual. But if they managed it, even after Per Haskell got his cut, Kaz's share of the scrub would be enough to change everything. To finally put into motion the dream he'd had since he'd first crawled out of a cold harbor with revenge burning a hole in his heart. His debt to Geordi would be paid at last. There would be other benefits, too. The Kirch Council would owe him, to say nothing of what this particular heist would do for his reputation. To infiltrate the impenetrable Ice Court and snatch a prize from the bastion of Fjordan nobility and military might? With a job like this under his belt, and that kind of scrub at his fingertips, he wouldn't need Per Haskell anymore. He could start his own operation. But something was off.
Why me? Why the dregs?
There are more experienced crews out there.
Mika started to cough, and Kaz saw blood on his sleeve.
Sit, Vanek instructed gently, helping Mika into a chair and offering Negrisha his handkerchief. He signaled to a guard. Some water.
Well,
prodded Kaz. How old are you, Mr. Brecker?
17.
You haven't been arrested since you were 14, and since I know you are not an honest man any more than you were an honest boy, I can only assume you have the quality I most need in a criminal.
You don't get caught. Van Eck smiled slightly, then. There's also the matter of my decouple.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
6 months ago, a decouple oil worth nearly 100,000 kruga disappeared from my home.
Quite a loss.
It was. Especially since I had been assured that my gallery was impenetrable and that the locks on its doors were foolproof.
I do seem to remember reading about that.
Yes, admitted Vanek with a small sigh.
Pride is a perilous thing. I was eager to show off my acquisition and the lengths I'd gone to in order to protect it. And yet despite all my safeguards, despite dogs and alarms and the most loyal staff in all Caterdom, my painting is gone.
My condolences.
It has yet to surface anywhere on the world market.
Maybe your thief already had a buyer lined up.
A possibility, of course. But I'm inclined to believe that the thief took it for a different reason.
What would that be?
Just to prove that he could.
Seems like a stupid risk to me.
Well, who can guess at the motives of thieves?
Not me, certainly. From what I know of the Ice Court, whoever stole my decouple is exactly who I need for this job.
Then you'd be better off hiring him, or her.
Indeed. But I'll have to settle for you. Vanek held Kaz's gaze, as if he hoped to find a confession written between his eyes. At last, Vanek asked, "We have a deal, then?"
"Not so fast. What about the healer?"
Vanek looked baffled.
"Who?" You said you gave the drug to a Grisha from each order. Mika's Tide Maker, he's your Therialnik. The fabricator who mocked up that gold was a Materialnik. So what happened to the Corporalnik? The healer? Vanak winced slightly, but simply said,
"Will you accompany me, Mr. Brecker?"
Warily, keeping one eye on Mika and the guards, Kaz followed Van Eck out of the library and down the hall. The house dripped Murcher wealth, walls paneled in dark wood, floors tiled in clean black and white, all in good taste, all perfectly restrained and impeccably crafted. But it had the feel of a graveyard. The rooms were deserted. The curtains drawn, the furniture covered in white sheets so that each shadowy chamber they passed looked like some kind of forgotten seascape cluttered with icebergs. Hoda. Now the name clicked into place. There'd been some kind of incident at Hoda's mansion on the Geldstrad last week. The whole place had been cordoned off and crawling with Stotwatch. Kaz had heard rumors of a Firepox outbreak, but even Inej hadn't been able to learn more. "This is Councilman Hode's house," Kaz said, skin crawling. "You want to know part of a plague." But the Merch and his guards didn't seem remotely concerned. "I thought this place was under quarantine." "What happened here is no danger to us. And if you do your job, Mr. Brecker, it never will be." Van Eck led him through a door and into a manicured garden, thick with the new nectar scent of early crocuses. The smell hit Kaz like a blow to the jaw. Memories of Jordy were already too fresh in his mind, and for a moment Kaz wasn't walking through the canal-side garden of a rich merch. He was knee-deep in spring grasses, hot sun beating down on his cheeks. His brother's voice calling him home. Kaz gave himself a shake. "I need a mug of the darkest, bitterest coffee I can find," he thought. "Or maybe a real punch to the jaw." Van Eck was leading him to a boathouse that faced the canal. The light, filtering out between its shuttered windows, cast patterns on the garden path. A single city guard stood at attention beside the door as Van Eck slid a key from his pocket and into the heavy lock. Kaz put his sleeve up to his mouth as the stink from the closed-up room reached him. Urine. Excrement. So much for spring crocuses. The room was lit by two glass lanterns on the wall. A group of guards stood facing a large iron box. Shattered glass littering the floor at their feet. Some wore the purple uniform of the Stadtwatch, others the sea-green livery of the Hood House. Through what Kaz now understood had been an observation window, he saw another city guard standing in front of an empty table and two overturned chairs. Like the others, the guard stood with his arms loose at his sides. Face blank, eyes forward, gazing at nothing. Van Eck turned up the light on one of the lanterns, and Kaz saw a body in a purple uniform slumped on the floor, eyes closed. Van Eck sighed and crouched down to turn the body over. "We've lost another," he said. The boy was young. The bare scraps of a mustache on his upper lip. Van Eck gave orders to the guard who had let them in. And with help from one of Van Eck's retinue, they lifted the corpse and took it from the room. The other guards didn't react, just continued to stare ahead. Kaz recognized one of them. Hedrick Dahlman, the captain of the Stadtwatch. "Dahlman? Dahlman?" he queried. But the man made no response. Kaz waved a hand in front of the captain's face, then gave him a hard flick on the ear. Nothing but a slow, disinterested blink.
Kaz raised his pistol and aimed it directly at the captain's forehead. He cocked the hammer. The captain didn't flinch, didn't react. His pupils didn't contract.
"He's as good as dead," said Van Eck.
"Shoot. Blow his brains out. He won't protest, and the others won't react."
Kaz lowered his weapon, a chill settling deep into his bones.
"What is this? What happened to them?"
The Grisha was a Korporalnik,